Good afternoon. From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crummery. Thank you for tuning in. Dozens of Juneau residents in the glacial outburst flood zone filed into the Mendenhall Valley Library on Saturday afternoon to learn how to prepare for flooding expected later this summer. Members of the Juneau Lions Club walked residents through the new flood map website made by UAS researchers and handed out weather alert radios. Local insurance providers talked about how FEMA's National Flood Insurance Program works. The program is still operating, but that might change given the Trump administration's past statements about weakening the agency. Reuben Willis, a State Farm insurance agent in Juneau, explained that the price for federal flood insurance is based on FEMA's risk zone maps, last updated in 2020. He recommended that homeowners lock in lower pricing before FEMA updates Juneau's maps again.
If they change your zone and put you in a higher risk zone, which would allow them to or require us to charge a higher premium, if you purchase the policy, you're grandfathered in.
He says that if homeowners with federal flood policies sell their place in the future, that grandfathered price transfers to the new owners. A new policy takes 30 days to go into effect, so Willis says Mendenhall Valley homeowners should consider applying now to protect their assets from potential flooding this year. Catastrophic floods hit neighborhoods during the first week of August the past 2 years. Laird Jones has lived in the valley since 1982. His place was on Skywood Lane, near the library. He says his home was spared during last year's record-breaking 16-foot flood, but that could change if a future flood breaches 17 feet. Last year, he watched the water level rise, too close for comfort.
The ditch was full of water, and we had a salmon swimming by in the ditch.
He says FEMA maps put his home in one of the lower-risk zones, so when he got a quote for flood insurance, it was just under $360 per year. Insurance providers say that's the base price for the program, but it can be around $2,000 for those in higher-risk zones. In the basement of the Alaska Heritage Institute in Juneau sit thousands and thousands of photographs. They were taken by a Tlingit elder who since passed on. But for decades, he documented important events in everyday life. And the organization wants help identifying people, places, and objects in the photos. Kahtkawu Cyril George Sr.'s family unearthed his photo collection in the wake of his death 11 years ago. His granddaughter, Lillian Woodbury, said she was astounded at the volume of photos he kept in a small Juneau condo.
That tiny little room had been harboring all of these memories he captured in photo. I mean, every time we thought, we've got them all, we pulled out another box or another container, and I'd be like, oh my God, Mom, it's another box of photos.
To Woodbury, George was grandpa, but he left a mark on thousands of people in Southeast Alaska. George was a Tlingit leader from Angoon who lived to be 92 years old. Videos of his speeches are used for Tlingit language classes, and a collection at the University of Alaska Southeast Library is named after him. A family friend suggested they donate the photographs to the Alaska Heritage Institute to preserve and store them.
There's so much just joy in these photos. It's one of my favorite things, looking through them and seeing people just having a good time. People dancing, people talking to each other, cooking out on the beach.
That's Emily Galgano, one of the archivists who's been combing through the photos for the last several years. Some of the photos are online now and printed in books that are available in Juneau and Angoon for elders to look through. SHI hopes people will recognize some of the faces.
The first thing is we tried to find photos where you could see people's faces clearly, because the point of the book is really to try to get some identifications.
There are 20,000 photos in the full collection. A lot of them are pet photos and landscapes, but of the 1,600 SHI has made available, most are of people. Dancers in full regalia, fishing trips with strung-up halibut, graduations and meetings. The photos are full of life. Basketball games and 4th of July parades. They show Tlingit people living, working, teaching, and making art. They show elders and babies, and elders with babies. And those babies may be elders now themselves. Tlingit photographer Brian Wallace helped SHI scan the photographs. He knew George growing up, and looking through the photos, he was surprised by how many there are of everyday life.
They seem mundane at the time, but looking back into the whole scope of things, it's just an amazing body of work.
Wallace says the photos of Kuik and early celebrations stand out to him, that they show how Southeast Alaska Native cultures have endured.
You know, they were thriving back then. They were thriving when he took the photos and still thriving.
And some of the photos were deeply personal for Wallace.
And then I loved finding the photographs that he had of my parents, to see some of those photos, and then also lots of photos of my aunts you know, my aunties cooking dinner or singing songs or just in the background of photos. It was always fun to see those.
Woodbury, George's granddaughter, says it was hard to part with the collection. The memory of his loss is still fresh, more than a decade later.
But we also didn't want a lifetime of him making sure he carried that camera around to be lost.
She hopes that others, like Wallace, will look through the collection and find photos of loved ones who've passed on.
I think if people walk away seeing these photos and they feel like he gave them that one moment in time back, that makes me happy. And that will be a small part of his legacy.
Another part of his legacy is Woodbury herself. She's a photographer, too.
I think I was 16 the first time he gifted me a camera. And that was all it took.
And you can find a link to the photo collection in the online version of this story at ktoo.org. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. And the Skagway Borough Assembly accepted Mayor Sam Bass's resignation on Thursday. Bass resigned over a matter of conscience after legislation passed that required a signature on all official documents. For now, an assembly member was appointed mayor pro tem to fill the mayor's duties. KHNS's Melinda Munson has been following the issue and has this report.
There wasn't much discussion when the Skagway Borough Assembly voted to accept Mayor Sam Bass's resignation. Mostly, assembly members and residents thanked him for his service. Here's resident Lynn Davison.
I applaud his efforts to speak in a voice that was representative of the entire community. To many of us, he epitomizes all that is good about our town. Tolerance, courtesy, decency, courage, and inclusiveness.
But Bass wasn't at the meeting to hear the gratitude. And the months leading up to the resignation have been heated and filled with frustration. It all started in March when Bass declined to sign three correspondence letters that the assembly approved. The letters were in support of local National Park Service employees, expressed concern about tariffs with Canada, and reiterated friendship with the Yukon. Local code requires the mayor's signature on official documents, but it didn't specifically list correspondence as official documents. Past mayors have signed correspondence, but Bass wanted the assembly to sign its own letters. He often spoke about maintaining a separate voice for the mayor.
And I feel that the mayor is not a member of the assembly. The mayor is a separate part, executive branch of the government. With that comes special responsibilities and considerations.
While Bass had some support, the assembly and many community members who testified felt the mayor was not doing his job. This is former Mayor Andrew Cremata back in March.
You are one governing body, and I feel like I'm here now two meetings in a row not talking about things that are really important to me, like the port and rock slides, and talking about this governing body acting like a body.
The assembly came back with an ordinance that clarified that correspondence was defined as an official document. It also gave the assembly the option of appointing a mayor pro tem in the event that the mayor was unwilling or unable to perform their duties. Bass vetoed the ordinance twice. His veto was overturned both times. He resigned after the second veto was rejected. Vice Mayor Deb Potter currently serves as the mayor pro tem. The assembly must appoint a new mayor to fill the spot until the next election in the fall. Potter has stated she is not interested in permanently filling the position. In Chicagway, I'm Melinda Munson.
And the Alaska Department of Corrections, which handles the state's jails and prisons, has taken in 40 people who were detained outside of the state by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The move comes amid a national crackdown on immigration by the Trump administration. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports.
Alaska Deputy DOC Commissioner April Wilkerson said in a statement that all 40 of the detainees are men, and they were taken in under a, quote, existing contract for federal detainees. Wilkerson says the state is being reimbursed about $220 per man per day, and DOC anticipates the men will be held in the state for about a month. She says the state's prison population is at about 83% bed capacity as of Monday. Wilkerson declined to answer additional questions, including what facilities the men are being held at and where they were originally detained. Anchorage-based immigration attorney Nicholas Alano calls the move unusual and says he hasn't seen transfers like this in his decade as a lawyer in Alaska.
This is like sending people, I think, almost like trying to send them to El Salvador, to some far remote. And it's just the same idea of punishing the immigrant, punishing their families, and creating fear and distress upon everybody.
Alano says he's been made aware that at least some of the detainees are being held at the Anchorage Correctional Complex. He says the conditions are very poor at the Alaska facilities, and detainees aren't able to leave their cell for very long or go outside.
The food is terrible, and the medical attention is subpar. This is different, and I'm not saying that it's a great camp, but my understanding and what the clients have told me, the treatment, the food, the space in the facilities are much better in Tacoma.
He's referring to the next closest ICE facility in Washington State. He says Alaska also has a shortage of interpreters. He says he's been contacted by the attorney of one of the detainees who has moved to Alaska, but as of Monday afternoon, he was not representing any of the 40 men.
I'm going to find out what we can do for him, try to get in contact with these other people, and just pass out the information that we are going to try to help and see what we can do.
A regional spokesman for ICE did not immediately respond to a request for comment. As of the end of May, 11 people in Alaska have been detained by ICE officials. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 51 degrees and overcast. There's still a 40% chance of showers this afternoon, but that should taper off by 7 p.m. Tomorrow looks sunny with a high near 55 degrees. Rain may return a little bit tomorrow night. Wednesday, it looks like it'll be cloudy, but not rainy, with a high near 56 again. And the rain may come again on Thursday and Friday. You're listening to KTOO.